You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. And now, Side B.
Let's talk about these walls.
Yes.
I guess you like this song.
This was my immediate favorite.
I knew it.
Because this is a mix of DJ Quick and Foreign Exchange. If Fonte and DJ Quick got in the studio together, this is what they make. You don't know DJ Quick or Foreign Exchange. How are you going to tell me no?
You think I don't know.
Also, this is where I fall in love with Anna Wise.
Mm.
I love her voice. And she kills this record. I really like her and Bilal together. Like, her and Bilal together on Institutionalized is dope. But Anna Wise just completely, like, steals my heart on this record. It's crazy.
So, this is produced by Terrace Martin and Larence Dobson from 1500 or Nothing. With additional production by Soundwave. And I should point out, like, basically, Thundercat is playing bass all over this entire album, and Robert Glasper is playing keys all over this entire album.
Shout out to Robert Glasper. I tried to tell y'all years ago.
This is it's interesting because this could almost be a single.
Yeah. Yeah.
The sound of it is very, could definitely work on radio, I think.
Yep.
But the concept of this is staggering.
Yeah.
Because it totally lulls you in.
Yep.
You think it's just a record about sex.
Absolutely.
And it's like, no.
At all.
And then you might try to think, oh, well, what if it's talking about like these walls, like right after Institutionalized? And when you get and you understand what's going on in the third verse.
Oh my God, it's third verse.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, and if the good people at Rap Genius have helped me understand this correctly, the guy who kills his friend in Sing About Me, Dying of Thirst.
Uh-huh.
This is his girl.
Yep.
That's a heck of a twist.
Yeah.
That's diabolical.
Dave Chappelle has ruined the word diabolical for me. It is forever funny because of Dave Chappelle.
Right. And the first, the first two verse, like, you know, it's about some other things, but look, it's about those walls, right? That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, those walls. Mm-hmm. That he describes on the first verse.
Right. And then the second verse, he's being a little bit more symbolic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third verse, it's like, oh, you know, it's, do you remember you know what the third verse is to me? Remember that, was it the episode of Chappelle where it was the dude who's doing the punchline and it was like, oops, pow, surprise?
Yeah.
The third verse is an oops, pow, surprise.
I need to binge watch Chappelle. I have not watched Chappelle's show in probably since 2006.
I've been making a lot of Chappelle references lately. Because you saw, like, my college team, UConn, is out of the tournament. So
yeah.
my response to watch the NCAA tournament is I'm pretty much at the player haters ball right now.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. The Silky Johnson picture was hilarious. Yes.
It's true, though. A lot of Chappelle references right now. Anyway, so these walls. This is your favorite song?
It was my immediate favorite. I still listen to it all the way through on each listen. I have amassed a group of favorites that I will talk about as our track by track progresses. So right now, my favorites are Wesley's Theory, For Free, and These Walls are my favorites right now.
So you're heavier on the front end of the album.
No, I just like. Never mind. Let's just roll this thing out real slow. Let's get into you. Can we get into you?
Woo! Hold on. I feel like I need to take a break, stretch a little bit.
Yeah. While you're doing that, shout out to everybody who is hashtagging CRS Live. The general consensus is that no, you cannot listen to this album casually. Shout out to S Fleming 777 who says this is exactly like a movie. You have to take the time to sit down and listen through it all. And I agree with that. Let's see. Let's get into you. I'm going to come back to those hashtags. Keep using the hashtag at CRS or hashtag, CRS Live. And, I'll get back to those a little bit later, but, we want to make sure we get through these track by track listings, but, go ahead. Let's talk about you.
So you produced by Taz Arnold and Who Are I? Additional production by Soundwave. We got background vocals, Bilal and SZA.
Oh, okay. SZA's on this. All right.
So when we saw this on the track listing, the immediate assumption was, well, this must be the counterpoint to I.
Absolutely.
This song is like actually crazy.
Yeah.
Like we describe a song as like, that song is crazy. No, really. This song is crazy. This song is about a man completely doubting himself.
Yeah.
right? Like the album's called The Pimp a Butterfly, right? And there's this whole like thing that is woven throughout, this whole notion of, you know, why is the, you know, caterpillar and cocoon and becoming a butterfly. And like, he is completely doubting that why did he get to escape? Right. And then when he did escape, like, you know, him being distraught about his sister, and it's just like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
The beat switch on this. Woo. Yeah. Cause I like the first beat, but then like that beat switch, I was like, oh, and again, like it's the nerdy stuff, the subtle stuff, like the skit, and like the way that is mixed, like the engineering on this, bravo, I'm just going to clap right now, is fantastic. Like, it just sets you up. And this is a super emotional record.
Extremely.
This is a really good example, maybe kind of like For Free, even though I like you more than For Free. This is an example of a record that you probably aren't just going to pick this out. I mean, maybe you're having a really bad day. But like, you're probably not going to just start by listening to You.
Absolutely.
How do you feel about You?
If you are successful at any level in your life, if you have experienced any sort of major victory in any area of your life, you can relate to this song. Where like, you do this amazing thing, but you are around you all the time. I said it in Walking Contradiction. You know, I compare your highlight reel to my behind the scenes. You look at what everybody else is doing and you only see their accomplishments. But you see you all the time, all the times you failed, all the times you've come up short, all the times that you have just done deplorable things that people would, you know, completely throw you out and cast you away for. And, you know, fame, money and notoriety, like, do not silence the voices of doubt. And sometimes they scream at us. So personally, I can wholeheartedly relate to this record, and you calling it crazy completely encapsulates, because I couldn't describe how I felt about this record. But you calling this record actually crazy makes total sense. And nobody just picks up this song and says, I want to listen to You. Like, no. Not at all.
Right.
Not at all.
There are a handful of records on this album that you might do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You is not one of them.
No.
In terms of the progression of the album, he's really like, this is the bottom, right? Yeah. Like, he is at he just hates himself. Right. At this point, he is just in this deep, dark place. And like, when you get to this part of the album, if you like stop and think about it, all of a sudden you immediately understand why I exist, even without the stuff in between.
Absolutely. Right? Yep. Yep.
And I almost wonder, look, it won 2 Grammys. I can't say it wasn't successful, but I wonder what a world would have been like where when the day the album comes out, if they release I as the single, if people know why I exists, I wonder if for those of us who weren't huge fans of it, I wonder if we would have thought differently about it.
I think we can answer that question when we actually talk about I on this album.
Right. I mean, I wanted to bring it up because the two of them are these sort of polar opposites.
Yep.
On the album. This is an intense, like, just a ridiculous record.
Yeah.
There are very few rappers who could pull this off so someone like Jay is way too self-aware to do this.
Absolutely.
Game has done something like this and it came off as corny.
Start from scratch, yeah.
Or make, because that's kind of Game. And by the way,
gamey.
I'm going to talk about Game when we get to the last track.
Okay.
Sneak preview. Game heard that and must have thought, oh man. How come I couldn't do that? But anyway, I'm trying to think of who else could pull this off.
I don't know. Use the hashtag the CRS highs, Live and tell
right,
us what
let
you
us
think.
Know. Let yeah. us know. So we're not just like waiting for like 30 seconds what we think about it. Like the highs and the lows are their own kind of range. Like typically when we talk about range for an artist, we talk about, oh, they can do like the stereotypical Czech record. They can do a club record. They can do an introspective record. They can do storytelling. There's an emotional range that we don't often talk about.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Jay has range, but even at his most, quote unquote, like his deepest song, like maybe something like Song Cry, he does not have the range of emotion that someone like Kendrick has.
No, you said it. He's too self-aware, and that's just what it
right,
is.
Right. Drake has a different kind of range. Drake is self-aware but doesn't care.
Like he's comfortable with who he is, like that's sort of, like comfortable in the sense of I'm not going to change this. This is just my makeup. Where Kendrick is wrestling with the reality right. of who he is. There's a difference.
Right. And Armand, I know you can, in particular, identify with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Listen to Kairos in stores now. Yeah, let's get into All Right.
Produced by Pharrell and Soundwave.
Yeah.
So after the emotional depths of You, right, yep. Kendrick is trying to fight his way out.
Yep.
Right. And literally, like, as long as he's got God, he's gonna be all right.
Yep.
This is a record that you could really just turn on and play.
Yes. And a lot of people, this was their early favorite. Probably yep. for that reason.
Right. And well, I think part of it too is like those first six tracks, you're really going down.
Yeah.
Especially You.
You take you to a pin.
Right. So the rise up or the attempted rise up, uh-huh. right, is it works so well in its favor. What's completely weird about this was originally for Fab. You know that, right?
I'm not surprised. I did not know
and
that.
In fact, Pharrell's hook was already on it when Fab was on it.
Oh, yeah, Fab went. Well, nah, Fab.
It was Fab doing the hook.
Oh, okay.
There's a video on YouTube of Pharrell DJing like at a Fool's Gold party from last year or whatever. And he there's like a 6 or 7 second snippet of Fab rapping the hook to this over an earlier version of this beat. Okay. It's really weird.
Okay.
Kind of like when you hear clips on that early version of Knock Yourself Out.
Oh my God. Yes.
Ooh. We're going way back.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That's exclusive audio footage. Woof. I'm mad. My immediate complaint with this song is that Pharrell uses the same sample or key or whatever that he gave Rick Ross on Presidential.
I'm not mad at it because this is better.
Yeah. Yeah. This was a grower for me. I didn't like this immediately. The musicality of it, because this is like the first modern sounding hip hop record on this album, it yeah. threw me off. So for some people, like the jazz, like for free, threw them off. And then I think You throws everybody off. But, you know, for free threw, you know, a good chunk of the audience off. This threw me off because I wasn't expecting anything like this. I'm hearing Pharrell. Pharrell's on this album. Pharrell constantly will tell you he is a Q-Tip stan and the jazz and all that stuff. So I'm thinking he's going to fit right in this pocket. We've heard Neptune's jazz records and they've been dope. And now I was like, this again, expectation. It wasn't what I wanted it to be, but hearing it in the right context, letting it play, like I grew to like this song.
See, this song was exactly what I needed on this album. I needed to hear something like this. And it's, I mean, after the depths of the previous song, this is practically a turn-up anthem. Like at this point,
yeah,
like
absolutely. You're so- I can hear this like at a festival. This is gonna kill. Not the way Mad City killed, but it's gonna kill when he performs this live.
I love this record. Love it.
Yeah.
So in terms of, is this the first time that they mentioned Lucy in the album, or is that?
I don't remember. I feel like they used it on somewhere on. For free, maybe?
Maybe. But Lucy, from this point on, Lucy, meaning Lucifer, really becomes a part of this album.
Yeah.
And in fact, the second verse is where Lucifer is trying to win over Kendrick.
Yeah.
That's not really something you hear too often in hip hop these days.
Of course not, because they're not really, really wrestling with that idea of what, you know, what Lucifer in this context represents. Like, not too many rappers are going to fight that. It's a good reason why a lot of rappers rap. So when they get presented with the opportunity of, you know, money, fame, jewels, women, and, you know, as you so eloquently put it, debauchery, like they're going to partake, you know. But Kendrick, I believe in this context, Kendrick understands his mission and, you know, what he wants to do. So, you know, he's going to have to fight and wrestle with this. And he's losing this fight early.
Yeah, I love this record. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it is where it is in the album. So yeah, shout out to Pharrell. All right. Who's had a tough week? We didn't even talk about the whole Blurred Lines thing. He's had a tough week.
Him and his divorce was finalized and he lost that money. And then Marvin Gaye's family, now they're going after T.I. for the Trouble Man album. I know. I don't even want to talk about it. Let's get into For Sale. I don't even want to talk about it. We'll talk about it like when we do our follow-up episode in a couple weeks.
All right. So much like the For Free, like it's no accident that there's a For Free interlude and then a For Sale interlude.
Yep.
Because they're meant to be, much like you and I are related, For Free and For Sale are related. So.
Oh, what? Okay. You and I is in the songs. I thought you meant me and you, like Armand and Doug.
Yeah, we brothers from another mother.
All right, Chris and Neef. All right, let's go. Yeah, so For Sale.
Produced by Taz Arnold. Additional production by Soundwave and Terrace Martin. You'll notice, aside from a handful of tracks, that there is not the sort of big name producers that you heard throughout Good Kid, Mad City.
Yeah.
You think this there's like a crew of people.
Do you think this was like a Thank Me Later thing where it was his first album and he kind of had a bucket list of first album things that he wanted to do?
I'm not sure. That's interesting. I didn't, you know, I, there's a whole like, I guess, I don't know if you want to call it a jazz scene in LA right now, but like Terrace Martin, Thundercat, like there's a whole sound evolving in LA and clearly Kendrick is wants to be a part of that, or he is a part of that. And this album really reflects a lot of that, whether it's the outright jazz-ish sort of songs or the jazz influences throughout these songs, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, so For Sale, now we've got, you know, this is about, I mean, this, like, if All Right introduces really the concept of Lucifer, like, this is about Lucifer.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this?
Another one of my favorites.
Really?
Yeah, I love this record. Huh. I love this record for a few. Of course, I love the production of it. The production's dope. I like the fact that, again, another throwback to DJ Quick, because he totally like channels the ghost of Sugar Free in his delivery. I hear Sugar Free all in this. So when you think of like, you know, pimpery or whatever, or you think of like pimping in hip hop, Sugar Free's the first name that comes to mind. So, you know, it's funny, the contrast between For Sale and For Free, where on For Free, he was determined not to be pimped. But by this time, he has been hoed. Like he is all in it. You know, I think the turning point on this album is when he says, you think Shireen had something on Lucy? Is you crazy?
Right.
Like what the temptation and trial he faced with the whole story of Shireen is nothing compared to Lucy. And by this, he's nose deep. How do you feel about this song?
Again, much like For Free, the place in the narrative is, I completely understand it and I like it. And when I'm letting it, you know, the sequencing and the way, there it is again, everybody take a shot. The way that this album like lays out is so tight that there for in a lot of these cases, you don't even have a chance to look up and go, oh, it's a new song. Like some of these songs really flow so well into one another. So when I listen to the album front to back, which I've been doing all week in preparation for this, for tonight, I obviously listen to it and I like it. I don't love it. But I also need more perspective on once I'm not listening to this album, like all day long, like when I sort of step back and go, and maybe I start to jump around a little bit, like that'll be really interesting for me, is to see how I feel about this.
Yeah,
but I like
it. Sure.
But I like it.
Okay.
I like the message, obviously. I like everything about it. I just can't say that it's my favorite.
Gotcha.
You want to move on to Mama?
Mama! Yes.
Produced by Knowledge and Taz Arnold.
Yeah.
This is a really interesting song to me, anyway.
Are you talking in what context?
Well, it's a song called Mama that opens up with an intro talking about how someone needs a sloppy.
I mean, he's not really,
for starters.
I mean, he's not really talking about his mother.
Well, right. When I first pressed play on this, and I was like, oh, it's called Mama, and then I see like a Chevy in quicksand, I was like, what's going on here? In terms of the story, so the role this plays is, right, is Kendrick's, he's returning home, right? He's trying to go back home. He's felt guilty about everything. He is trying to run away from these temptations, from what he calls Lucy. And so he's come back home. I really like the beat on this. The third verse is interesting.
Yeah.
I really like the fourth verse.
Yeah.
Like what happens at the end. Yeah. I think that's really kind of cool. And it sets the stage for what they're eventually going to do with I. But it gives it a really different feel. It makes it it feels like something that would happen in a movie.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this?
I love this beat. I think this is another standalone record.
Yeah, I think you can jump right into this one. I agree. Yeah,
this has been another casual favorite from people that I've talked to. They'll immediately reference this one as well. I love the third verse where he's talking to the little boy. Home is actually Africa and not Compton. I've come to realize.
Think so?
Yeah. There's some subtle hints, and I didn't pull them up.
Yeah, I think home. Much like there's a couple places on this album where he's talking about,
or it could just be a metaphor of like to who he was.
I think it's both.
Yeah,
I think there are cases where it's both. But you're right. I think there's definitely, you know, he's talking about the third verse. Part of that really feel a little bit like
the third verse feels like Compton, right?
Yeah.
Third verse feels like Compton to me. Like I feel like he's gonna have that interaction with somebody he sees as himself at that age. And I think he says that in one of the verses.
That he met a little boy that resembled his features, right?
There you go. This is one of those records that gets the hook for this, and then like the Layla Hathaway sample just gets stuck in my head. It's one of those records that just, it gets lost in your head. I don't know if you're at work and you have a beat in your head, and it's like 2 hours later and that beat is still in your head and you don't realize it. That's one of those records. It's like a dreamy record. But I like the song a lot. We get into Hood Politics.
Yeah, let's talk about Hood Politics.
Boo-boo.
So we heard a little bit about, we heard a preview of some of these rhymes probably almost 2 weeks ago at this point.
Yeah.
Little less. He was on Big Boy's radio show. And he rapped over some Biggie instrumentals. So Hood Politics, produced by Tay Beast, Soundwave, and Thundercat. This is – the beat to this really had to grow on me.
Mm.
Well, so first there's the first beat, which frankly almost sounds like something out of like a D'Angelo or Alabama Shakes album. And then when they actually get to the regular beat, it's a really slow grower. But it is structured again like – a classic like mid to late 90s Dr. Dre track is, where there's all these just the different elements and the instrumentation eventually gives it like more life to me. But the beat was a little underwhelming at first, which is disappointing because I love some of these rhymes. How do you feel about it?
I might be the only person who's like not big on this record.
What is it about it?
Maybe it's again like the fact that it kind of sticks out like a sore thumb within the context of the production. I get the concept, you know, it's like young Kendrick and he's kind of returning back to who he was and his mindset, you know, being a kid in Compton. And I get that. And the shots at, you know, Kanye, Drake, I heard there was a shot at Troy Ave. I haven't caught it yet. Cause remember Troy Ave called him a weirdo rapper. but yeah, I think the fact that this just sticks out like a sore thumb. And then me, I'm waiting to hear the record he did on Colbert. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But yeah, I might be the only one that's not crazy about this record. I'm not crazy about it. I guess it's serviceable.
I think it's good. I don't think it's great. My problem isn't that it doesn't sound, you know, that it's more of a conventional like hip hop beat. I mean, I will say that is essentially my biggest critique about the album is I like hip hop beats. Like I kind of miss some of that sometimes on this album. But
yeah.
I think it's just that if it is a conventional hip hop beat, it takes a while to really get going. And it's the mixing and all the additional little details that elevate it. But you're right. It does not necessarily fit in with the rest of the album. In terms of the storyline, it fits in, but it's not, it's something that they probably could have cut actually. Which is interesting to say. Like, I'm not suggesting they should have. Like, I listen to the song and I like it. I don't love it. But it's not, to me, it's not crucial to the album. There's this kind of string where he's giving us, like, he's trying to examine, like, these different sort of aspects, right? So the next track, we're going to, you know, how much a dollar costs, like, that examines this aspect. And then Complexion examines this aspect. Hood Politics examines an aspect, but it doesn't, you know, if they wanted to, they could have done it differently. Do you know what I mean? Like, this record isn't crucial to the flow of the album to me.
Yeah.
I would have anything else you want to say?
Nah, go ahead. But somebody made a really good point that the Colbert record could have fit right after Hood Politics and preceded how much a dollar costs.
So from what I've heard, there isn't a real like regular studio version of that Colbert record.
Mm.
Terrace Martin said that they came up with that the day before they went on Colbert. So they were probably working in the studio and they probably have like rough versions, but I don't, there is no, as I understand it, there's no, it's not like it was slated to make the album and they cut it. Like there is no finished, like polished version of that song that exists.
Wow.
So let's talk about how much a dollar cost. Please. Cause I've seen a lot of people talk about this track.
Yes.
So features James Fauntleroy and Mr. Big himself, Ron Risley.
This is Mr. Biggs. I don't know any Mr. Biggs. What's going on? I'm sorry. Any R. Kelly Mr. Biggs song I can quote. One of my many talents.
Produced by someone named Love Dragon. Okay. But you could have fooled me because this sounds like a Dr. Dre beat.
Sure. Sure.
Those the drum programming alone.
I mean, a lot of this drum programming sounds like Dre on this whole album.
Right. Right.
So I'm sure he had his fingers on this album.
It was interesting, right? Because you and I believe we've talked about this before, but I've definitely read that he actually, at least in sort of the later parts of his career, he actually will work on stuff and then just not even take credit.
Yeah.
Right? Hate It or Love It. He completely transformed that record, but still gave Cool and Dre the credit.
Yep.
I wonder if he's like, there's just, to me, there's too much of his fingerprints on this album. But anyway, I like the beat, for all that being said. I actually really like Ron Isis' outro. This is it's a very interesting song because it's a concept that's been done before, right? Maybe not recently in hip hop music, but it's certainly not, it's not an idea, right, that has never existed before, right? I mean, he's being, so, you know, in For Sale, he's being tested by Lucifer, right? But in this song, the twist at the end, the M Night, you know, Shyamalan twist is that he's being tested by God.
Yep.
And I don't know if I love that twist. Mm. I understand why it exists because it's his failure before God that really sets up the next run of the album. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I read somebody said this online and it actually really stuck with me because it perfectly describes it. Feels a little like sophomore year in college creative writing to me. Nah. But I think it's really good. All that being said, I'm nitpicking. How do you feel about it?
I love this record. Biblically, it is sort of a throwback to a story in the Bible about a rich young ruler approached Jesus and said that he wanted to follow him. And Jesus says, to sell all your possessions and follow me. And he can't do it, and he walks away dejected. So it's sort of like that. It kind of has that, but it's not that verbatim. Honestly, if I want to get like, you know, really like biblically nitpicky, the fact that, you know, he says that he failed to earn his way into heaven, that's biblically wrong because you can't earn your way into heaven. But that's a totally different conversation. And on a completely different note, Ron Isley on this record descends. Do you remember the Royal Rumble 1994 casket match between The Undertaker and Yokozuna when every single heel comes down, they beat up The Undertaker, they throw him in the casket, and then they wheel him down the aisle, and then The Undertaker like appears on the screen and he floats up in the sky and he disappears and he's gone until SummerSlam, where he basically, there's a fake Undertaker brought back by Ted DiBiase and Leslie Nielsen looks for the real Undertaker, yada yada yada. I say all that to say that moment when the Undertaker is floating in the sky, that is Ronald Isley on this record. I love him. Even his ad lib, his I love Ron Isley on this record.
I knew you were gonna work in a wrestling reference.
Of course, of course. But this is one of my favorites. This is definitely one of my favorites on the album. I like this record a lot. It's somber, but it's not sad. I'm not depressed when I hear it. Even though the keys are very depressing, but I'm not depressed when I hear this record. But I love this record. This record is dope.
Yeah, it's good. I like it. Let's move on to Complexion. Zulu Love, produced by Thundercast and Soundwave. Terrace Martin helped out. And Scratches by Pete Rock. And Pete Rock's on the hook.
Yep, 1-2.
And I forgot to say, features Rhapsody. Yep. So, you know, it's pretty... This is not out of all the songs on this album, this is not a record that tries to disguise what it's about in any way. Like, it's pretty obvious what it's about, but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Not at all.
I like this song. Right. I think Rhapsody's pretty good. I think, you know what it is? It's a chill song.
Yeah.
How do you feel about it?
I like this record a lot. Another favorite. I love the hook. I love the chord switch during the verses. I love the chord switch leading to Rhapsody's verse. I love that Rhapsody's verse beat switches and like calls on the spirit of Knots circa 1999, 2000, 2001.
I like the beat switch for Rhapsody's verse. It's nice.
I love the fact that she kicks off the, let me talk my Stu Scott. That layer, I don't know why I love the layer of that where, you know, his ESPY speech and what that means is kind of like immortalized. So she's comparing her verse to what Stuart Scott did at the ESPYs. And then also within the context of complexion, what Stuart Scott did for like journalism and black culture and pop culture. And like, I just the little subtle stuff. Rappers don't have to, you don't have to overly explain everything that you say. You just kind of have to say it and let the audience get it sometimes. And she did a great job at this. I love the concept of this album. The concept in itself, like, you know, it honestly would require its own Clock Radio Speakers episode. Like, it's very layered. And even
of
layers,
what?
Even layers that, and I was about to say, like, even layers that I haven't caught all the way yet because my DJ explained it to me. He was explaining it to me today. And he's very like pro black and works with various African American organizations here locally, and you know, just wants to see that part of our community, you know, prosper and flourish and all that stuff. So he's catching things that I'm not even blinking at. So maybe I'll have him come on the show or something and explain it beyond the details that I've seen, just, you know, beyond, you know, complexion. We've had this long light skin, dark skin battle in the black community, and it's largely self-destructive, and it has inhabited a good chunk of us to where some of us only date women who are a certain shade. Some of us date men who are a certain shade. If you're light skinned, that means that you are affluent. If you're dark skinned, that means that you're stupid. I think Rhapsody makes an ode to that. It's buried deep. It's back from slavery times. And it's just a deep concept that was executed and talked about in a really beautiful way that confronted it without like pointing the finger in a way that I think people thought that his Billboard article did. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we could, right. And
but he gets into Billboard that articles, later. Yeah.
And I that's coming up in a minute, and I can't wait to talk about that. One other thing to note about this record, it was jarring to hear another rapper.
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm.
Especially since she has a very different style than Kendrick.
Yeah, but it works.
It does. I was like, oh, we're getting punchlines now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think the beat switch really works. I'm glad she got this opportunity. It'd be interesting to see if anything good, you know, really good happens for her. But it's a good record. I like it.
Yep.
And it's really funny for me to say that because like a lot of these records, like, it's hard to say that they're bad records. And what I mean by that is it's like, look, this is a really well done song where the concept is a great concept that should be talked about. Do you know what I mean? Like the normal things that we talk about when we decide if we like a record, for some of these songs, I feel like people are gonna point out, like when they hear what we're saying on the show and listen back later, they're gonna be like, well, what do you mean you didn't love it when they're doing this? Like the thematic, like thematic's the wrong word. Some of these songs are about and what they mean for some people, I know that they almost render the rest, the actual like song itself, somewhat irrelevant. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like the concept of this song is so good that the fact that it's pretty well executed is a good thing, but I suspect for some people it almost doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But let's talk about a song that I love.
Okay.
Which would be The Black or the Berry.
Yeah.
This is produced by Boy Wonder and someone named Stephen, I don't even know how to pronounce this dude's last name. Stephen Kosmaniak? I don't know. The musical outro, I guess, is produced by Terrace Martin. Oh, that's funny. The drums on this are the same drums from Crack Music and Power. Mm. Same sample, anyway. So this when this record comes on, it's almost jarring, but to me in a good way. Much like the transition between You and All Right, the energy really takes a step up here. And that is one like kind of maybe weird complaint I might have about this album is there are moments where I wish there maybe was more urgency and energy. But this song has that like in spades. I love this beat. I think Kendrick, I think like just a, as terms of a rapping performance, I think Kendrick is great on it. I like Assassin's Hook. I want to get your take on it before we talk about the actual like content of his lyrics. How do you feel about this record?
It is the hardest song on the album, and that's ironic. And I think that that helps the concept.
Okay.
The song is good. You know what? I'm not in love with it, but it's a dope record. It's a dope record. It's not something that I like call back to, but like I gotta hear the Black of the Berry. But it's a dope record.
Oh, see, like to me, like this is a record you can just put this on. The energy of this is crazy. So the first two verses, right, are mostly about how white America perceives Black America. And then the last verse, he sort of turns the camera around and he takes aim at himself and really Black America in general, right? Yeah. And when we first talked about this, I believe I gave this a little bit of flack. And I don't know if I still agree 100% with his sentiment at the end, right? There's a, to me, there's a big difference between why two people in a gang may try to be shooting each other and how the racist like structure of our society enables situations like what happened in Ferguson or like what happened with Trayvon Martin. Mm-hmm. But I get, right? To me, the real message, like, and what really eventually I get here, and I don't even know if Kendrick's aware of this, but I think Kendrick is saying that he and really Black America by extension, that they can't fix or control or really alter these deep societal problems. They can't just, it's not a quick fix. And
yeah.
And I think he would tell you that they can't even do it. So what you have to then do is to fix what you can fix.
And I would say that, not that it can't be fixed, but that it's not a quick fix and then fix what you can. I agree with that.
Right. You know, I hope that what Kendrick's, right, I hope Kendrick's saying we can only fix what we can fix, right? The problem is that all these things need to be fixed, right?
Right.
People have to, people of all colors, creeds, races, like people have to, what's the word I want to use here? If Kendrick thinks that, and I've heard the sentiment from other people, but if Kendrick thinks that, you know, that Black America needs to work on itself, if you want to use that term, or if gangbanging is, if that's hypocritical, if he thinks that that's a problem that needs to be solved, no one's going to disagree with that. But that's not the only way that the ultimate problem will get solved.
Yeah.
Right. And there, and I think that's the real thing for me is like when people talk about, and we've had a lot of episodes about this in the past year, right? We did a ton of episodes, whether it was the Eric Garner case or Ferguson. We did a, I mean, we did a total like three episodes in Ferguson, right?
Yep.
The problem is that it's so widespread that it's both macro and micro, right? It is both on individual people and it is on cities, and it is a problem also for government to solve, and it is a problem for the world to solve. Like, it is a problem from top to bottom. There is no one way to fix it.
All right.
Still there?
Yeah.
All right.
Still here, but we're gonna have to go into overtime.
Yeah, we gotta hustle, get through these songs, and then we might have to finish up next week. Yeah. Anything else you wanna say about Black of the Bear?
Nope.
Let's talk about You Ain't Gotta Lie, Mama Said.
Yep.
Also produced by whoever this person Love Dragon is, who, by the way, I did some research. I can't find anything. Like I haven't found any like anything. I don't know who Love Dragon is exactly. Oh, actually, Love Dragon might be Terrace Martin and somebody else when they work together. Interesting. Shout out to Rap Genius. Anyway, You Ain't Gotta Lie, Mama Said, this is essentially the follow-up from Real.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which was my favorite record on Good Kid, M.A.A.D. City.
So how do you feel about You Ain't Gotta Lie?
I love the production. This is a throwback to Warren G. This is like Warren G production. I like this a lot. I'm still kind of getting with the concept. I'm still picking out everything that he's saying, so I'm not really like there to talk about that. Although, you know, the hook is pretty straightforward. You know, he's saying some other things within the verse. But yeah, this is super Regulate G-Funk era. This is the Dove Shack, like super Warren G 94, 95. Total. And I love that. Mm. What about you?
I like it. I think it's really good. It's in an interesting spot in the album. Like, there's a couple of these records. I guess I would say, like, You Ain't Gotta Lie, Complexion. There's one other one I can think of where, and maybe like that run of institutionalized, no, like These Walls. Nah, These Walls is a good example. I don't know. I feel like what's interesting is like after Black of the Berry, I kind of almost want that to be followed up by I, but I understand why it's not. So all that to say, I like You Ain't Gotta Lie. And it's funny, I find myself kind of humming the hook to it. Yeah. But again, like you, it's weird. Like, I've heard this album a bunch of times, but I don't know if I've really dug into this one as much.
Yep. Yep. I wonder if it's like a little case of fatigue or something where like you are digging through so much that by the time you get to this point, you're like, and it's not like this isn't a long listen, but it's a very intentional listen, as we talked about earlier. It requires a lot of thought and a lot of attention, and a lot of energy. So maybe that's it. Maybe it's the place in the album where, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not sure.
Right. And to me, like, the beat is very just sort of like carefree, and the hook trying to sort of like makes you kind of like, you kind of just hum it, kind of waves out of sight. It almost like tricks you into not kind of paying attention to the lyrics, yeah, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Agreed. All right. Well, let's move on to I then, because what happened to I is really fascinating.
Absolutely.
So this is a whole new version of I. When I first leaked out on SoundCloud, do you remember that there was a version that had an intro?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Not the same intro as this.
No.
But close.
Yeah.
Which leads me to believe that they always, like, that this storyline has been picked out for a while.
Oh, and
they
probably,
right. And so they decided to tweak it. And I should point out, I produced by Rocky. The best way to describe it is it's mixed and recorded to sound like a live version.
I thought they took the version that was on Saturday Night Live. That's what I heard.
I don't think so.
That's what I heard. But it's, I don't know. I got to watch it because I never saw that. So I just heard it was.
Really?
Yeah. I never saw his performance. It could be different.
It's kind of interesting to. So this is basically meant to sound like he's actually doing a concert in Compton, right? Yeah. That's the point. Yeah. And I love the detail. Like, you know, the third verse is interrupted by people scuffling, and then he's talking, and then he sort of goes in this acapella verse.
N-E-G-U-S. Yep.
I actually have a real kind of, I could get real nitpicky with that last verse, but I'm trying not to.
How?
That is not what the N-word descends from. It's not. N-E-G-U-S is a word that it's from Ethiopia and it refers to kings. That is totally 100% right. But it is not as though, at least everything that I've ever read, and I tried to do my reading this week because I heard this and I was like, this sounds kind of interesting. Everything that I have read, it is not as though when Europeans were colonizing Africa, they didn't hear this word and then, oh, okay, that's what we're going to use. Okay, we're going to flip it. Like, that's not how it works at all. Okay. And that bothers me because otherwise, this is a really dope verse.
All right, let's save that for next week.
Okay.
Let's say that for next week because we're crunched for time.
But how do you feel about this addition?
I love what they did with the live version. I love conceptually what they did to it. I actually listen to this every time I listen to the album again.
I do too.
Yeah, how it breaks up with the fight, and you know, basically to me it says like Kendrick has gone through all this stuff. He's finally reached this place where he's ready to serve, you know, his community, and he's gotten over himself, and Lucy doesn't have the grip on him anymore. And the fact that, you know, the people that he's trying to save and help don't even care enough to not fight at an event that he's at is what beautifully transcends into Mortal Man, you know, because it's really like a, what am I doing this for? I know I'm doing it and I know what I'm doing it for, but what am I doing it for? Because you're doing it for people who a good chunk of them are not going to appreciate all that you do. They're right. Going to, you know, use you for lack of a better term. And that, like, that's real. Cause all the people that he compares himself to, like, you can make cases for all of them experiencing that same thing. I think with any sort of leadership, you're going to deal with that. I guess that's a good enough transition to get into Mortal Man, right?
Right. The problem I had, actually, ironically, because he references him a couple times this album, is bringing Michael Jackson into this. That actually really bothered me.
Really?
Yeah, Michael Jackson was a pedophile, man. Like, it's not that complicated. Michael Jackson had a really screwed up childhood, and he was a really screwed up adult.
I disagree. But we have...
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
Absolutely.
All right. Society did not tear him down. His childhood tore him down. No, he was
I believe that his childhood was very messed up. But do I think he touched them kids? Absolutely not.
You don't think so?
No.
Nope. We just end the show right now.
Use the hashtag CRS podcast and let us know if you think Michael touched them kids.
oh my God.
So we have a lot of really interesting feedback from the show. I mean, everything from, you know, people thinking that, you know, we don't think this album is as good as Good Kid, Mad City. We have so many angles to go. Like, we might have to stretch this out 3 weeks because there's another conversation I want to have. But in addition to that, I want to have another conversation.
Got to have that conversation.
Yeah.
There's an entire conversation to be had about the absurdity of Mortal Man.
What?
Ugh. If people love Kendrick, if anybody else...
Are you talking about from the stance of like him comparing himself to those people?
I'm talking about having a conversation with the ghost of Tupac.
Oh.
If anybody else did that, they'd get killed.
Yeah, I didn't love that conversation.
Here's the deal. I'm a victim to it too. I really like Kendrick. I actually think it kind of works, but it's crazy.
I mean, it's a throwback to the dream he had, you know, as a child. And I get why he did it. I totally get why he did it, but I don't love it like everybody else loves it. And I also don't love the fact that the internet like revealed the real interview that they got that from. That was corny. Like, just
really?
Like, let that live. I don't need to, because it deflates the story. Like, all right, we found this obscure interview from Europe and the internet, because the internet is the internet and we want to know everything. Like, it's just, I don't know. Some things I don't need to know how David Copperfield pulls rabbits out of a hat. I don't need to know. Poof. There go the car. Ladies and gentlemen, Rick Ross really brought out David Copperfield. Top 10 moment in Clock Radio Speakers history. Brought David Copperfield out while he had a show in Las Vegas. Amazing. Anyway.
Rick Ross has inspired some of our most favorite conversations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But there's so many conversations that we can have. You want to have a conversation about the absurdity of Mortal Man and Tupac, and we can talk about that. I want to talk about the gospel of Kendrick Lamar and whether that, you know, whether this album preaches, if it's Christian, if it's biblical, if it's all, because I've had some really interesting conversations. I want to pull people in for that. I want to pull in like other people's responses. We were scared, but like 2 hours, it wasn't enough.
Right. I was sitting here like, oh, we're going to fall short. Man, yeah. We could talk for another hour.
Seriously talk for another hour. So I think what we're going to do, because normally, Doc, you and I believe that when we review albums, like our synopsis and summaries are really, really good. But we might have to leave that up in the air until next week. Or we might have to record a bonus episode.
I think we need a little bit of time because, like, yeah, I wanted to talk real quick about Good Kid, Mad City versus this album, but we should leave that for next week. So that's the cliffhanger.
Dun, 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 dun.
Everybody who's been listening, everybody who's been tweeting, using the hashtag CRS Live, thank you so much. Thanks to Fourth District. Thanks to the Pulse Radio.
I'm gonna go grab a charge and I'm going to respond to these since we didn't get to them on air, because I'm seeing some responses like what record was like you. So I'm hearing Drunk by Myself, DMX,
which is
Damian,
a dope record.
Eminem with Kim,
which I never liked. But yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, yeah.
What I was trying to point out was the range, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree with you.
All right. Anyway.
Explain what you mean by the range just really quick.
So Kendrick can pull off you, but he can also pull off I.
Oh, okay. I thought you said something else.
And M... maybe he pulls off Kim. I actually don't like that record. Neither. But when M goes brighter, it sounds corny.
Okay, that's what you meant. I meant in the terms of the things that Kendrick talked about on the record, the bearing your soul, the as I refer to it as like a false transparency. I've talked about that at length sometimes where artists are like, this is my record where I'm bearing my soul. And you're not really bearing your soul. You're bearing your soul enough to like get sympathy or, you know, to manipulate a situation where you're, or, you know, like true transparency puts your character at risk.
Right.
And I don't know if Drunk by Myself, Damien or Kim. Well, I mean, Kim kind of does that, but then that fits in the Slim Shady character, so it's not really out of Eminem's range. But I don't know if Drunk by Myself and Damien like do that to the degree that you does. So, but yeah.
Anyway,
we got to wrap up.
We got to wrap up. So, thank you to everybody who's been listening. Use the hashtag Clock Radio Speakers. Let us know what you think. Tweet us at CRS Podcast. Visit the website clockradiospeakers.com. We've got a brand new T-shirt up for sale. If you like the show, if you love the show, if you want to support the show, please, please do. We appreciate it if you get one. Also, just looks good. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to wear it. Thanks again to the Pulse Radio. Thank you to Fourth District for letting us take over and for being our new partner. Anything else you want to say, Armand?
Nah, thanks to Rich Nice for staying late because he's exhausted. And
Shout out to Rich. What's going on, Rich?
So, yeah, we're going to get out of here. I'm going to get on Twitter and respond to some of these requests after I get to the house. And we will see you guys next week. We obviously have a lot to talk about. You guys be good. Thanks for tuning in.